All right. Good evening, everyone. Let's begin. First of all, just a short request. If you are not on the shul email list or on the institute email list, I'm going to pass around a piece of paper with a pen so you can add your email address. We will not bombard you with anything other than sheer announcements. But like this, in the event that there is a cancellation or a change, we don't have to have people. I felt bad last week. There are people who showed up but didn't know about the change in schedule. So I'm going to start this over here. All right, let's begin. So we're starting this week with Parshas Toldos. So I find something very interesting. You know, in general, when I try to prepare for this year, I usually like to not necessarily refer back to what I've done in past years so that I don't have a Yetzirah to repeat and we start with something new. But inevitably, there are certain Parshas where I always find myself fixated on the same Pasuk year after year after year. And Parshas Toldos is one of those examples. I think for the last 3-4 years, I've given this Wednesday night cheer on this same Pasuk. And the amazing part is, every year there's something different. Every year there's something new, and Emiratz Hashem will explore a new dimension this year as well. Look at number one. And number one is a dramatic Pasuk on many different levels. It's dramatic because there's so much that is said yet remains unsaid. But at the same time, it is dramatic because it highlights what throughout Bereishis seems to be a troubling dynamic. So the Torah says, "Vayehav Yitzchak es Esav ki tzayid befiv." Remember again, beginning of the parasha, Rivka Imena becomes pregnant. After years of being without children, she becomes pregnant. She's told Vinei Somim bebitna. She is told that she is carrying twins. And already again, from the time that the babies are in utero, she realizes something dramatic is unfolding. This is no normal pregnancy. This is no regular situation. But she understands that there are literally two nations, two dynasties, and two destinies that are being nurtured and nourished within her. They come out, Yaakov and Esav. You know, it's also, I will just tell you as an aside, it's exceptionally important if you want to appreciate the full profundity of these parshios. You know, we know the end of the story. So we often know how the characters turn out, and as such, we often inject some of the conclusion into the realities of the narrative. So when we think about Esav, right, from the time that he comes out of his mother's womb, and again, he's Admoni, he's got a ruddy complexion, so we see the bloodshed, the murderer. You should just realize, Esav, I'm sure, was a precious little boy, just like every little boy is a precious little boy. Maybe he was a bit rambunctious, maybe he was a bit difficult, maybe a bit oppositional, defiant. It could be a variety of different things. But understand that when he was a child, he was just as beautiful, just as wonderful as his brother. As the boys grow up, the Torah says, as they grow up, so the differences between them become more pronounced. The differences between them become more acute, and we begin to see again that they are dramatically different people. So the Torah tells us, Vayehav Yitzchak es Esav ki tzayid befiv. Yitzchak loved Esav, literally translated ki tzayid. Tzayid means that which is hunted. That which is hunted was in his mouth. V'rivka oheves es Yaakov. And Rivka loves Yaakov. So again, at first glance, why is the Pasuk troubling? Why is the Pasuk troubling? It's favorites. Favorites. Whenever parents play favorites, it's always disastrous in the family. Again, and the truth is, at first glance, this would just seem to be another dynamic that has played out generation after generation after generation. The theme of Bereishis usually is, there's a child who perpetuates the legacy, and then there is another who is pushed outside of the fold. And we'll come back to that again. But the idea over here, at least the Pasuk seems to be at first glance, Yitzchak Avinu loves Esav, whatever this means, Kitzayid Befiv, and Rivka loves Yaakov. Now again, when you see such dramatic psukim, such dramatic words, it asks so many questions, meaning, what does this mean? Is it literally that the parents are playing favorites? Now again, unfortunately, we see that favoritism is something that happens in Bereishis, and unfortunately erodes the fundamental familial fabric. We see this most acutely where? By Yaakov and Yosef. Excellent. Remember again, Yaakov plays objective favorites, meaning he favors his son Yosef. Again, I want to be clear. Doesn't mean that he loved Yosef more than his other sons, but he favored Yosef. Yosef got more paternal attention, which, again, we'll get to it a little bit, which is just a fascinating dynamic, because, you know, when we read it, I don't want to spoil the story, but, you know, when we'll learn about Yosef and his brothers, so you often have in your mind this image of like a bunch of little boys vying for their father's attention. They were grown men. They were grown men. Yosef was the youngest, and he was 17. His brothers were significantly older than him already. You know, I want to point out, Freud wasn't the first person to discover that our relationships with our parents color every other relationship in life. This was not like his chiddush in life. We knew it already way before Freud because the Torah Kedoshah tells us this. You have grown men that literally, again, grown men, wives, children, families, all different kinds of things going on. Yet again, as an adult, when a grown child doesn't feel that they have the love, the attention of their parent, that undermines their sense of self, it undermines their security, it undermines, again, their emotional well-being. So we so again, and again, I want to point out, Chazal say that Bishul, the Chazal fault Yaakov Avinu for giving Yosef the Ketonas HaPasa, for giving Yosef the multicolored coat. And Chazal say that because Yaakov favored Yosef by giving him a nicer coat than the rest of the brothers, Niskalgel Hadavar, the matter escalated, and our ancestors ended up enslaved in Egypt. So you understand what that means? Chazal, the rabbis blame Yaakov Avinu for Egyptian enslavement. And they blame it, they trace it all back to one little event. You gave him one more toy than the rest of the kids. You gave Yosef a nicer coat. You gave Yosef, and it's not just the coat, by the way. It's the attention. The coat is meaningless. It's the emotions. It's the love that drove the brothers crazy. So on one hand, we could say, maybe that's what's unfolding over here also. The Torah is telling us again about the fact that Yitzchak and Rivka have favorites. Yitzchak loves Esav. Rivka loves Yaakov. Okay, so what we're going to try to explore tonight, first of all, what does this mean? Could it really be that they're actually playing favorites? Again, remember, one doesn't need to be one of the avos and the mos, but we all know, every single parent knows that you never play favorites. And every single parent knows that if you play favorites, you're only doing one thing, which is sowing the seeds of discontent amongst your children. It's parenting 101. So could it be that Yitzchak and Rivka are making this mistake? So the simple answer could be, yes, it could be. It could be. And by the way, I want to point out, it doesn't make Yitzchak and Rivka any less holy if they made parenting mistakes. It just makes them human, which is part of the beauty. Remember, understand, the Torah brings down these stories because it's from these stories that we learn what do we learn from our parents? All of us usually learn two sets of lessons from our parents. The first set of lessons, right, are what we should do, and then we learn things from our parents of what not to do. It's not because our parents, I think my parents usually listen to the shir, so I just want to say it doesn't apply to my parents, but to other people's parents, they could definitely apply. But this idea is parents aren't perfect, parents are human beings, and we all make mistakes with our children growing up. So as our children mature, hopefully they take from us certain things that are good, that they want to perpetuate, and they learn from our mistakes. I made mistakes in my parenting. My children sometimes bore the brunt of those parental mistakes, and they will not take those mistakes into the way they raise their children. So it could be that the lesson that the Torah is teaching us is that sometimes parents make the mistake of playing favorites. Sometimes parents make the mistake of aligning themselves with a particular child, and all it does is it hurts the children's relationship with the parents, hurts the children's relationship with one another. That's possible. But perhaps the Torah is also teaching us an additional lesson. Let's try to understand a little bit deeper what the Torah Kedoshah is trying to convey to us. So first of all, just on a simple level, what does it mean when it says that Yitzchak, Vayehav Yitzchak es Esav Kitzayid Befiv? So we're going to explain multiple interpretations. Rashi has a simple one. Rashi says, number two, Befiv, Kitargumo Befiv Shal Yitzchak. So again, Rashi says there's two interpretations. Vayehav Yitzchak es Esav Kitzayid Befiv literally means, according to Rashi, that why does Yitzchak love Esav? Because Esav fed him. Esav was the hunter. Esav would bring his father fresh meat every day or whatever degree of frequency. And so again, this created a bond between father and son. Yitzchak saw that my son is going out to the field every single day for me. Yitzchak saw that my son is literally going out and working hard on my behalf. This created a sense of love between father and son. Midrasho, we're familiar with the Midrash. Befiv shal Esav shayetzado sumer ameh bedivarev. Rashi then has a more sinister approach. And the more sinister approach is, Rashi's first interpretation of Kitzayid Befiv means Yitzchak loved Esav. Why? Kitzayid, Tzayid means because that which Esav hunted, Befiv, he placed in his father's mouth. The other interpretation of Rashi is that Yitzchak loved Esav. Why? Because Esav hunted his father with his mouth. What does it mean he hunted his father with his mouth? He deceived his father. Remember again, Yitzchak Avinu was blind. Yitzchak Avinu was blind. He's going blind already at this point in time. And again, remember, Yitzchak, unlike his father, was not the out there personality. Yitzchak Avinu, again, is much more behind the scenes. Yitzchak Avinu is much more reserved. We don't know, if you look throughout the Torah, Yitzchak Avinu actually is the one patriarch about whom we know the least about. We know about the Akedah, we know about the Akedah at the end of Parshas Chayisara, and then pretty much anything and everything else that we learn about Yitzchak is a replica, or I should say, is the same things that happened to Avram Avinu. He had to relocate because of famine, he dug wells, he got into fights with neighboring shepherds. Yitzchak Avinu is not the man of dynamic activity. That's by design. Yitzchak is the one who solidifies the foundation. He's not the innovator. Avram Avinu is the innovator, Yaakov is the innovator, Yitzchak is one who solidifies the foundation so that his son is able to build. So Rashi says over here that literally Esav pulled the wool over his father's eyes. He literally went ahead and he hunted his father. He deceived his father. And again, Rashi quotes the Medrash. The Medrash discusses that Esav used to ask his father all of these complex halachic questions that led Yitzchak to think that that Esav was exceptionally pious. So he hunted his father with his mouth. Fine. Take a look at number three. There's nine Latora. Sort of Suratskin in his Perush on the Chumash says something quite beautiful that I think will help us understand the first lesson from this pasuk. So he said, "Vayehav Yitzchak esav Rivka haveses Yaakov." Yitzchak haya ola tamima. Yitzchak Avinu, his lashon of here is very beautiful. His lashon Yitzchak was a pure, unblemished offering. V'lo ra'a bebeis aviv avenu mirma. Ukeshe esav shal also ich ma'asrin es atzeven hemin b'tziv kaso. Sort of Suratskin makes such an incredible observation. What is this split between Yitzchak and Rivka? Why is it that Rav Suratskin is commenting on the approach of Rashi, the second approach of Rashi, that Kitzayid Befiv means that Esav hunted his father with his mouth, which means that Esav went ahead and he deceived his father. So Suratskin, and again, it worked with Esav, it didn't work with Rivka. So as Rav Suratskin, how was Yitzchak so easily fooled? How is he so easily fooled? How is it? Now, again, so the simple answer is, as we'll see, the simple answer is that he didn't have maternal intuition. Mothers understand things about their children that fathers simply do not understand. It doesn't make a difference how wise the father is, mothers have this understanding of their children in a deep and profound way. But Suravskin says, still, how is it that Yitzchak is fooled and Rivka is not? So he says something amazing. Everything has to do with their upbringing. What kind of home was Yitzchak Avinu brought up in? He was brought up in a beautiful home of spirituality. There was no familial strife. I mean, there was no familial strife for one simple reason, because Yishmael was also kicked out of the house. Remember, again, there's shalom. Everybody's happy. Everybody's honest. There's no deceit. There's nothing underhanded. And so when Esav goes ahead and asks all of his questions, which were a ruse to get his father to think that he was pious, what does Yitzchak think of the questions? Wow, so beautiful. Look at this righteous son I have. Baruch Hashem, he's asking me, and it's kind of like a klutz kasha, some of them, but look at these questions he's asking, he's learning, he's growing. Aval Rivka, lo'asa ba'arama beis aviyah, toch umirma ulefichach yada lahavchin bein tov l'ra. Rivka Imenu does not grow up in a home of tzadikim. Rivka Imenu grows up in a home of deception. Rivka Imenu grows up in a home of dishonesty. Rivka Imenu grows up in a home of people constantly trying to take advantage of one another and get the upper hand on one another. And therefore, ulefichach yada lahavchin bein tov l'ra. You couldn't pull one over on Rivka Imenu. You can, for one simple reason. She saw it all. she experienced it all. Again, it's not our topic for tonight, but Chazal speak about the way that her brother Lavan tried to take advantage of her, tried to take advantage of her situation when she was a young girl. Such craziness, meaning to say that Rivka Yemini grew up in a dysfunctional home is a gross understatement. She grew up in a home of deception, trickery, and underhandedness. And therefore again, therefore again, I want to be clear, did Rivka love Esav? Of course. Every mother loves her child. Every mother loves her child. And even if that child does not turn out the way the mother had hoped, and even if that child, to be very honest, is an abysmal disappointment to the parent, a mother, this, by the way, again, not our topic for tonight, but this, understand, is the fundamental distinction between maternal love and paternal love. So fathers don't like to admit it, but our love is very often tied in to a child's accomplishment. The greater the accomplishment, the greater the intensity of love. The lesser the accomplishment, the lesser the intensity of love. The love will always be there, but it's absolutely performance-based love to a very large degree. Maternal love is unconditional. Maternal love is not tied into anything other than the fact that this child is an outgrowth of me, that this child is a piece of me. So ultimately, again, so what happens over here? So Yitzchak Avinu says that's in the Torah. Yitzchak Avinu grows up in a home where there's no deception, there's no trickery. So at the end of the day, he takes Esav at face value, and he loves him. He's a good boy. Rivka heves es Yaakov. Not to say that Rivka doesn't love Esav. Of course she loves Esav. It's her child. It's an unconditional love. But at the end of the day, she also knows who he is. She knows what he is. She knows what he is doing and what he's not. And she knows that he's actively pulling the wool over his father's eyes. What's the lesson the Torah is trying to teach us? The lesson is to understand the impact that our childhood has on our adult perceptions and conceptions. The way we view the world is very much colored by the nature of the childhood we have, by the nature of the home in which we grew up in. And this is an incredibly important yisod, because sometimes people have traumatic childhoods. Sometimes people have, and when I say traumatic, there's a whole spectrum of trauma. Trauma doesn't have to be something emotional or physical, but traumatic could just be sometimes children see things or hear things that they just shouldn't be exposed to as children. And it leaves a mark on a child's neshama. And a child who grows up with that type of trauma becomes an adult who sees the world in a certain way. And this is important, because sometimes we're very cynical, and we're very jaded, and we're very sarcastic. And we wonder to ourselves sometimes, where did that come from? So sometimes it traces itself back to some of our earlier life experiences. And it's important sometimes, well, it's always important to do a self-check. It's always important to be an introspective person. It's always important to understand, why do I see the world as I do? And sometimes it has a lot to do with the home in which I was brought up in. So what the Torah is trying to teach us is, understand the impact of your childhood home on your adult eyes. Understand that the way we often see the world as adults is influenced and informed by the homes we grew up in, by the childhood we had. Conversely, as parents, what it also teaches us is, be very careful about the home you create for your children. Because anything and everything which happens in your home will leave an imprint on your child. You know, we all know that, you know, sometimes parents think that children don't hear something, don't see something. Children hear everything. Children see everything. Children pick up on everything. And remember, again, as we mentioned before in Pasht Shiurim, our children remember very little of what we tell them. They remember a lot more of what they see. They remember everything, what they saw us do. And they remember, ultimately, again, the behaviors they saw in the home. So this cuts both ways. On one hand, as parents, we have to be sensitive to the impact that our actions have. And when I say actions, it's everything. It's how you walk in the door at night. It's how you speak to your spouse. It's how you deal with stress. It's how you deal with setback. It's everything. everything influences and imprints upon our children. And what they see in our homes will influence the men and women they will become. Conversely, when trying to figure out why we view the world in a certain way, sometimes we have to trace back a little bit, ultimately to our childhood, in order to understand who and what we are. That's lesson number one that the Azdaim Torah learns from this particular parasha. To take this a little bit further, take a look at number four. So this is from Rav Tzvi Yehuda Kohen Kuk. Rav Tzvi Yehuda Kuk was the son of Rav Avram Yitzchak HaKohen Kuk. Rav Kuk was the first chief rabbi. This was before the founding of the state. He was the first chief rabbi of what was then Palestine, British Mandate Palestine. So Rav Tzvi Yehuda, his son, was not the chief rabbi, but was the Rosh Yeshiva of Merkaz HaRav. So Rav Tzvi Yehuda says something absolutely amazing. He goes on, he says, and again, I want to just point out, we're going to learn a number of different lessons, a number of different ideas, none of which are mutually exclusive. See, he says something amazing. Look in the right-hand paragraph. V'yahav Yitzchak es Esav kitzayid b'fiv. Yitzchak avinu haya hemshich shel ha-kivun ha-ideali ha-ruchani shel Avram avinu. Asher yitzav es bana ves beso achara v'shomu derech Hashem. V'im kol ha-chinuch v'adrach shel Avram avinu. Mofiya dover mishunu mitzayid. So first of all, the first thing that Rav Tzvi Yehuda says is something amazing. You know what the Torah is also teaching us? And this is an incredible lesson as well. Sometimes, and this is such a good lesson to hear as parents, sometimes you can do everything right and still have an Esav. It can happen. Sometimes when our children do bad things and make bad decisions, that absolutely is a result of the chinuch we are giving them. But sometimes, again, there are things that just happen. And sometimes you could be a grandson, a son of Avraham Avinu, you could be married to a righteous woman, you could be building a beautiful spiritual home, and for some unexplained reason, you have a child who simply does not perpetuate, you have a child who simply does not continue in the way in which you had raised them. He says, "Bevadai hayacheshek lahamshich doros shlamakanchi Hashem, aval isav beshalo bakshonos ishyo deatzayid b'shum ofen ein efsharos latakin." Do you think that Yitzchak Avinu ever thought that he was going to have a son who prided himself on his hunting prowess? This was not Abrahamic pride. This was not the type of son that Yitzchak Avinu wanted to raise. Yitzchak wanted to raise tzaddikim. Yitzchak wanted to raise righteous, humble people filled with incredible humility, not this type of physical aggressiveness. Look at the second paragraph. B'matzav kaza. So now the question is, what does Yitzchak do with an Esav? What does Yitzchak do with an Esav? He says, now, according to Rav Tzvi Yehuda goes on a little bit of a different departure, which is, he accepts the fact that Yitzchak was not fooled by Esav. He knew who Esav was. He understood that he was a hunter. He understood that he was not dwelling in the tents of spirituality. He knew exactly who his oldest son was. So what do you do with him? Second paragraph, right-hand side. B'matzav kazeh, ulai haisa efsharos shiyeh kemo etzel Yisachar uzvulun. Yaakov Yeshev Yilmat Torah, Ve'esav Yaspik Lo Kol Tzrachov, Yitin Lo Akol, Afilu Melach V'Teven Lachin, Vayehav Yitzchak Es Esav Kitzayid B'Fiv. So what does Yitzchak Avinu do? He says, it's fine. My child didn't turn out the way I thought he would. But fine, but you know what? He has incredible kochos, he has incredible strengths, incredible abilities. My job now as a father is to what? Help him channel it in the right way. How can Esav channel it? It's beautiful. You understand, by the way, that the Min Kemach ain't Torah. Min Kemach ain't Torah. Somebody's got to work. I know this is an unpopular sentiment, right? Somebody has to work. By the way, actually, I should rephrase it. Most people have to work. Because again, obviously, there is should be some very small segment of the Jewish people, which devotes itself to the pursuit of Torah, and that spiritual endeavor is supported by the masses who are obligated to work. That is called the Yisachar Zvulun partnership. Yisachar, one tribe, which devotes itself to learning. Zvulun are the captains of industry who ultimately are the fuel for the spiritual engine. So Yitzchak says, okay, I've got a Yaakov who wants to dwell in the tents of spirituality, and I have an Esav who wants to hunt. I have an Esav who has no interest in sitting down in the Beis Medrash. I have an Esav who has absolutely no interest in devoting himself to spiritual matters. He wants to be out in the field. He wants to hunt. He wants to be successful in industry. Okay, we could work with this. We could work with this. I will endeavor to create a synergistic partnership between my two sons. But says Rav Kook, Umikana Hevdel ben Yitzchak l'Rivka, left hand column. So what happened? So Rav Kook says, here's your thing, Yitzchak and Rivka. Yitzchak haya le'ela u'le'ela. Abstractivi. Absoluti shamaimi. Which is another way of saying, Rav Kook says, that Yitzchak Avinu was an ivory tower tzaddik. What does that mean? Yitzchak Avinu was not of this world. He was not of this world. Already as a young man, he was dedicated as a karban. Yitzchak Avinu lives the rest of his life in a state of exalted kedusha. Rav Tzihuda says, he's abstractivi. He lives in the world of abstract kedusha, lives in the world of abstract holiness. He's a spiritual absolutist, which on the other hand, which also means he only sees the good in anyone and everything. So what happens? Umitzido titochin efsharo shal seder kazeh, she'esav yiyeh maspik, as agashmirs, shela osek batorah. And Yitzchak Avinu is abstract, almost beautiful, spiritual, to the point of being divorced from the reality of this world, understands that Esav will support the Torah enterprise of Yaakov. Okay. Aval Rivka, haisa min aheles hameshek. Ba'alas habayis. Faces of Tzihuda says, Rivka was the balabasta. Kam bedvarm shebekdusha. Rivka imenu, you know, was like, okay, Yitzchak, very nice. That's such a nice idea. Go back to your tower. Right? I'm going to tell you exactly how this actually is going to work. Because Rivka imenu is the one, ultimately, who has her finger on the pulse of the family. Who has her finger on the pulse of reality. He rasa, as shichuso so v'rishuso shal Esav, v'yada sha'afilu li'os m'seyela osik patora. See what Rivka saw is the following. Rivka said, my dear husband, you're right. The Jewish people will always survive based on a synergistic partnership between Yisachar and Zvulun. Those who devote themselves to spirituality, being devoted by the masses who devote themselves to industry. But lest you think for a moment that Zvulun, when he goes out to the world, doesn't have to be holy. Absolutely not. The only way Zvulun becomes a captain of industry is because he brings God with him into the business world. Because he brings God with him into industry. Because he's just as wise. See, this is the great unspoken secret of Yiddishkeit, which is Yisachar is no more holy than Zvulun, right? Those who sit in the base medrash are no more holy than those who go out to earn a living. As long as those who go out to earn a living do so, Bikdusha Bitara. If they are the ambassadors of God, then they bring the Ribon Shalom into every corner of the world. Sirifka says, my dear husband, you don't understand. In order to be a Zvulun, in order to go out and to support the Torah enterprise of Yisachar, of Yaakov, you also have to be holy. You also have to be holy. And she knows her son Esav, again, as much as she loves him to pieces, he's not holy. He's morally bankrupt, he's spiritually depraved, he doesn't have holy, he has divested himself as a result of his bad decisions of his Kiddusha. As a result, he cannot be the Zvulun. As a result, he cannot be a partner in the enterprise of Yaakov Avinu. And therefore again, he says, about, so go back up to number one for just a moment. So according to Rav Tzvi Yehuda, now we understand the Pasuk. Vayehav Yitzchak es Esav kitzayid befiv. Yitzchak is not fooled. He knows who his son is, but he loves him. Why does he love him? Because he sees both of his sons as the two pieces to the Judaic puzzle. Yaakov Avinu is the one who devotes himself purely and solely to the enterprise of Torah. Yeah, but again, in Kemach in Torah, somebody's got to support that. Perfect. Esav, I love you. Kitzayid befiv. Because you will put game. You will put meat. Befiv. In whose mouth? In whose mouth? In Yaakov's mouth. You will support the enterprise of Torah. You'll have a synergistic partnership with your brother. Verifko heves as Yaakov. Rivka Imenu says, now again, this is not a topic for this year. We spoke about this in past years. The relationship dynamic between Yitzchak and Rivka is something that requires much study. Because there seems to be something fundamentally missing from this story, and that's what?
Communication.
A conversation between Yitzchak and Rivka about the kids. Right? Maybe we should sit down and talk about the kids a little bit, because we're definitely on different pages. Now, the Torah never records that communication. Does that mean the communication never happened? It's possible that it never happened. It's possible, remember again, Yitzchak and Rivka have a very different relationship than Avram and Sarah. Avram and Sarah are partners. Avram and Sarah are partners all the way through. What does Rivka Imenu do when she goes in and she sees Yitzchak for the first time? Vatipa me'ala gamo. So people translate, she fell off the camel. Then she fell off the camel. She prostrated. She saw her husband as the tzaddik. And so he was here, and she was here. She didn't feel herself on the level of an equal. She, as much as she filled the void left by Sarah on a matriarchal level, their relationship was dramatically different. It's interesting. Grandparents and grandchildren have the same type of relationships. Yaakov and both Rivka and Rachel have really a partnership. Avram and Sarah have a partnership. Yitzchak and Rivka, it's not clear. So again, did they have the conversation? Didn't they have the conversation? When Mashiach comes and we're sitting down at the Sudas Leiv Yasan, we will ask them and I'm sure they'll tell us. But Rav Tzvi Yehuda says, here's the disconnect. Yitzchak thinks that his sons could have this synergistic partnership and he loves Esav for the role he's going to play. The Rivka Heveses Yaakov. Because says, no. Esav, I love you. Of course I love you. But you're not sincere. You can't be the Zvulun. You will not support the enterprise of Torah. We all know that. I love you because you're my son. But at the end of the day, my special affinity for Yaakov is because he is the one who will perpetuate, he is the one who will continue the Abrahamic legacy. What do we learn according to Rav Tzvi Yehuda from this section? What's the lesson? The lesson ultimately, again, the lesson is really from the mistaken notion of Yitzchak. The lesson is that every koach can be channeled in the right way. In other words, Esav's redemption, and this is the important part. You know, if you would ask Stam a person who didn't come to the shir tonight, you know, if Esav wanted to do tshuva, how would he do tshuva? So people will say, oh, he has to go into the tent like Yaakov Avinu and learn Torah all day. No, Esav can't learn Torah all day. There are some people that can't sit in the base medrash all day. And by the way, they're no less holy, they're no less beautiful, they're no less wonderful. HaKadosh Baruch Hu programs all of us in different ways. The tshuva for Esav would have been, take your kochos and support spirituality. Take your kochos and support the monotheistic endeavor. Take your kochos and allow your brother to grow. In other words, you don't have to learn Torah all day, but make sure that whatever you're doing in life somehow supports the Abrahamic initiative of spirituality. That would have been the tshuva for Esav. Yitzchak Avinu was convinced that his son is redeemable. Rivka, unfortunately, has to acknowledge that he is not. Not that he's not redeemable, but he's choosing not to redeem himself. So second lesson, is that there is no such thing in life as a bad midah or a bad trait. It's just a misused midah and a misused trait. In other words, our midos, our kohos, they all come from energies. Energy is parith. Everything depends on how you use your energy in life. Esav's great mistake is that he took all of his passion, all of his strength, all of his energy, and he just used it in all of the wrong ways. Had he channeled it in the right way, you know, Chazal say it's possible, he could have been even greater than Yaakov. After all, again, he was the Bechor. Being the Bechor, being the firstborn in and of itself, endows a person with an additional dimension of spirituality. He could have been greater, but he chose not to channel his kohos. And this is a very important yesod. We often think that our job in life is to change. More often than not, we don't have to change. We have to channel. We have to channel. Each of us have kohos. Each of us have incredible abilities. The mistakes we often make in life is that we're channeling our energies in all the wrong directions. But if we reroute the energy, if we reroute the koach into productive ways, then there is no telling what we could accomplish. Let's go on. Number five, Rav Hirsch. Rav Hirsch here says something dramatically amazing as well. He says a second factor. Now, I want to tell you, Rav Hirsch spends a lot of time on this whole story, and actually he is mamish hung up on this dynamic in the relationship between Yitzchak and Rivka. He has a dramatically different narrative. I encourage you to look at this. In a dramatically different narrative where he says, Rivka was telling Yitzchak over and over and over again that Esav is not who Yitzchak thinks he is, And Yitzchak refuses to believe her. This is Rav Hirsch's narrative. But that's not, look at this piece in number 5. So a second factor. So Rav Hirsch is trying to understand, what does it mean that Yitzchak Avinu loved Esav Kitzayid Befiv and Rivka loved Yaakov? A second factor, which could only have a pernicious effect, was the difference of the feelings of the parents towards the children. Unity and complete agreement of parents in the education and the same feelings and love to all their children, even to those who are not so good, yea, just those require most of all, even more than those who are physically weak or ill, loving care and consideration and sacrifice. That is the first fundamental condition and the cornerstone of every education. So Rav Hirsch, first of all, is saying, like, what's going on over here? How is it that they're favoring one child over the other? And if Esav is really struggling, then ultimately, again, how is it that both parents aren't giving him extra attention? So look what he writes. That Isaac's sympathies were more inclined towards Esav, Rebekah's to Jacob, can moreover easily be explained by the attraction of opposites. Watch this. We see Yitzchak, risen up again from death on the altar, preferring to withdraw from the bustle of the world and to live quietly in the proximity of the desert, living at the well of Be'er Lachai Ro'i, we're going to discuss it in just a moment, away from the busy traffic of men, that Esav's lusty, active nature appealed to him, and that he perhaps saw in him a force which he had lost, could be a support to the home, would be quite possible. Rivka, Rebecca, on the other hand, saw in Jacob's whole being a picture of life unfolding, of which, in her father's house, she never had the remotest idea. The sympathies are explainable, but parents should not allow such hidden feelings to influence them in making any difference in their love towards their children. So if Hirsch says advances, I think is an incredible chiddush. Yitzchak and Rivka's behavior could be explained by the theory of opposites attract. What does that mean? Who is Yitzchak? Yitzchak, to a very large degree, was a withdrawn individual. Remember again, and we saw this in Rav Tzvi Yehuda as well, after Yitzchak is placed on the altar, he essentially becomes different. You know, sometimes when people undergo, do call it traumatic events, you feel different. And when I say traumatic events, all you have to do is you ask a person, Rahman al-Islam, who lost a loved one. And that feeling when they get up from Shiva, and everybody goes home, and they have to walk out of the house, and they have to go back to work, and you look around the world, and the world, everything is the same, yet I am so fundamentally different. I am different. The world is the same. Everyone else is the same. I can't relate to people the same way. I can't interact the same way. So Yitzchak Avinu becomes a changed man after the Akedah. And to a very large degree, he has difficulty. I don't mean like a social difficulty. I mean like a theological, spiritual difficulty, just being a regular person. He's not regular. He was a carbon, or he was about to be a carbon. That is a lofty level of spiritual accomplishment. And as such, you don't see Avraham Avinu is interacting with everyone, speaking with everyone, being Makai everyone, inviting everyone into his tent. Yitzchak Avinu, again, maybe he did, but the Torah doesn't record it. We don't see the open, engaging, jovial personality of Avram in his son Yitzchak. Yitzchak Avinu is much more withdrawn. Yitzchak Avinu is much more to himself. Yitzchak Avinu is much more introspective. Yitzchak Avinu ultimately, again, spends his time, spends his abilities, ultimately working on himself. Therefore, says Rav Hirsch, Yitzchak saw in Esav that which he lost. Who was Esav? Esav was a chevraman. Esav was out. Esav was hunting. He was strong. He was brave. He was valiant. He was gallant. All of these midos that Yitzchak Avinu did not have, he saw in his son Esav. On the flip side, Rivka is drawn to Yaakov. Why? Because what does Yaakov represent? Yaakov represents the life that Rivka never had a chance to have. What does that mean? As we said before, Rivka Imenu grows up in a deceitful home. Rivka Imenu grows up in a home of unscrupulous and dishonest individuals. And what does she see? She sees her little Yaakov. And he's so pure. He's so innocent. Yes, probably his parents shielded him from a lot of stuff, which is a good thing. And he was being brought up in this beautiful spiritual cocoon. And she was drawn to that purity. Yitzchak Avinu was drawn to the aggressiveness, to the strength, to the power, to the bravery, physical, that he did not have. And Rivka is drawn to the purity. Rivka is drawn to the simplicity that she did not grow up with. So that's why, again, according to our first, the taich in the pasuk is Vayehav Yitzchak es Esav. Yitzchak Avinu loved Esav. Why? Ki tzayid b'fiv. He was self-sufficient. He was strong. He could make things happen. He was reliant on no one. He flexed his own muscles when he wanted, how he wanted, wherever he wanted. And Yitzchak Avinu was drawn to that. Because as a result of his life circumstances, those were never midos that he was ever able to develop. The Rivka Oheves Es Yaakov. Rivka loves Yaakov. Why does Rivka love Yaakov? The Torah doesn't give any reason. What's the reason? It's dafka because there's no reason. It's the simplicity of Yaakov. It's because he's Yaakov. It's because all he does is he tries to cocoon himself in the world of spirituality. Each parent is drawn to the exact opposite. Let me share with you one last approach, and then we'll bring everything together. So there's one more piece in this that I think, in order to understand this, we have to take a little bit of a journey back. So remember, again, if we go to the end of Parshas Chayisara. So rewind a little bit. End of Parshas Chayisara, middle of Chayisara, beginning of Chayisara, Avram Avinu commands Eliezer to go to find a wife for Yitzchak. Avram dispatches Eliezer, ultimately again, to go to Aram Naharaim, Avram Avinu's birthplace, to go find a wife from Avram's family for Yitzchak. Okay, so now Eliezer, again, like the split screen over here, Eliezer went, found Rivka, everything is great, he's on his way back. So the Torah tells us, as Eliezer is journeying back, what is Yitzchak doing? So the pasuk says, number 6, the Yitzchak bo, mi bo be'er lachai ro'i. Yitzchak Avinu comes, again, Yitzchak Avinu was living in Be'er Lachai Ro'i. That was the name of the place, Be'er Lachai Ro'i. V'hu yoshev Eretz HaNegev, what is Yitzchak Avinu doing in Be'er Lachai Ro'i? V'yeitze Yitzchak lasuach basad lefnos arev. Yitzchak Avinu goes out to the field. Lasuach, we'll see, means to daven, in the field, before the evening. V'yisa einav, he lifts his eyes, v'yar, and he sees v'negma lim ba'im. There are camels coming, okay? So the Rashbam points out over here, why is Yitzchak by Be'er Lachai Ro'i? So the Rashbam points out over here, number 7, Shehari Yitzchak Yoshev Be'eretz HaNegev, Shesham Be'er Lachai Ro'i. Yitzchak Avinu was living right now in a place called Be'er Lachai Ro'i. So what are you thinking to yourself right now? Good. What you're thinking is, who cares? Right? What is, okay, for this I came out, Be'er Lachai Ro'i. I'm saying, like, what does that matter, that he's living in Be'er Lachai Ro'i? Watch this. This is not the first time we've seen this place. Take a look at number 8. Vayomer l'malach Hashem. Rewind even a bit more. Rewind a bit more. Avram doesn't have a child with Sarah. Sarah says to Avram, marry my maidservant Hagar. Avram marries Hagar. She becomes pregnant. And again, there's a major, major falling out in the home. I'm skipping a couple of pieces here. But there's a major falling out in the home. To the point that as Yishmael is getting older, Sarah says again, you have to get... Let me fast forward a lot. So meaning, rewind, fast forward a little bit. So Hagar has a child, then Sarah has a child, and Sarah comes to Avram and says, I can't raise a Yitzchak if there's a Yishmael in the house. Kick him out. Kick him out. You know, Avram Avinu was exceptionally reluctant to do so, but he ultimately listens. Sarah kicks Hagar and Yishmael out. That's number 8. So remember again, Vayomer l'malach Hashem, Hinachara, v'yalad bein v'karasa shmo Yishmael, kishma Hashem alon yacha, v'yeper adam, v'yado b'kol v'yad kol bo, v'al p'nei kol echad yishkon, v'tikra shem Hashem adover eleha, ata kel racha, kel racha, excuse me, Ata El Roi, Kiamra Hagam Halo Raisi Achare Roi. Al Kane, Kara La Be'er, Be'er Lachai Roi. So ultimately, again, where does Be'er Lachai Roi come back? Where is it first mentioned? It's mentioned by the birth of Yishmael. It's mentioned by the birth of Yishmael, okay? So now again, just so you understand, I know these facts seem totally irrelevant, but we're going to paste it together in just a moment. Yitzchak Avinu is living where? Good. Be'er Lachai Ro'i. Hagar is told. Hagar first is expelled. And she is told that she's going to have a son Yishmael. Where? Be'er Lachai Ro'i. Fast forward again. Hagar comes back to the home. She becomes pregnant. Gives birth to Yishmael. Sarah becomes pregnant. Gives birth to Yitzchak. It's now time to expel Hagar and Yishmael from the home. So ultimately again, so what happens? So take a look at number 10. I'm skipping for just a moment. Take a look at number 10. So this is now Hagar and Yishmael are out on their own. Kicked out from the house. They have run out of water. Vayichlu hamayim min hachemes. So they use up all the water. Vatashleich es hayeled tachas achat hasichim. What does Hagar do? Now this is a dramatic story in and of itself. What does Hagar do? she literally casts the child under one of the bushes. In other words, Hagar does something exceptionally unmaternal, although again, this is not our analysis of her. Her child is dying. Her child is dying. Normal maternal instinct would be, cradle your child for however many moments he has here. She can't do that, for whatever the reason, she can't do that. She places him tachas achas hasichim, ultimately again, underneath one of the bushes. Watch this. Remember we said before, going back up to number 6, the Torah told us, Vayetze Yitzchak lasuach basada. Yitzchak Avinu goes out to David in the field. Look at number 9, the Radak. Where in the field? Lasuach basada. Kilomar letayel bein hasichim. He goes to walk around and to daven by the sichim, by the bushes. Do you see what's happening over here? Yitzchak Avinu takes up residence in the place where Yishmael's birth was announced. And now, where is he spatzering? Where is he walking around? It's possible that he's walking around by the very bushes that his half-brother was cast away in his final moments of life. Now remember again, Yishmael recovers, Baruch Hashem, he's okay, Yishmael does tshuva at the end of his life. Yitzchak Avinu lives where the birth of his half-brother was announced, and now he's going out in the field, lasuach basoda, letayel bein hasichim, to walk around. Why does the Radak have to tell me that Yitzchak is walking around the bushes? What does that matter? Because these are not ordinary bushes. Where is he walking? He's walking in the very spot where Hagar discarded Yishmael to die. And what is he doing in this place? Torah says, Vayetze Yitzchak lasuach. The Gemara says in number 11, Tikein tfilas mincha. What is he doing over here? So lasuach means to converse. He's davening in the field. You ever wonder to yourself? So we know again, what do we learn from Yitzchak davening in the field? What was he davening? No. Yitzchak didn't daven mincha, right? Remember again, mincha is not so much later. He davened, whatever, we don't know what he davened. He davened in the afternoon. He davened in the afternoon. He davened a prayer in the afternoon. But what was the prayer? Like what? He didn't say Ashrei. He didn't say Shmoneh Esrei. So what did he say? What did he say? Look at the Medrash, number 12. This is dramatic. The Medrash says, Vayetze Yitzchak mechevron lasuach basad lifno sarev, lehispala lifnei boro, sheimore tamir apanov, Shelo yinaseu. Ribono shel olam, I'm davening to you. What does it mean, shelo yinaseu? Don't test me. Don't test me. You tested my father so many times. And you want to hear something amazing? Everyone thinks that the tests of Avraham Avinu were lech lecha. Tests of Avraham Avinu were relocating because of famine. The test of Avraham Avinu was having to find the burial place of Sarah. Do you know that the two greatest tests of Avraham Avinu were the Akedah, number one, and what was number two? What was number two? For some reason, Chazal don't even count it as one of the tests, but I think it's one of the most dramatic tests of Avraham Avinu. The willingness to kick Yishmael out of the home. Avram did not want to expel Yishmael. Avraham Avinu is the person who brings every single person closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And I have to kick out my own child? I'm the one who runs after strangers and asks them to come to my home. I'm the one who runs after all the avodah zarah idolaters, and I see the good in them. I see the beauty in them. And my own son, I have to kick out. Now, at the end of the day, he does. Why? Because the Ribono Shel Olam intervenes. The Ribono Shel Olam says, "Kol Masha Tomer Elecha Sara Shema Bekola." Whatever Sarah Menu tells you, you have to listen. It wasn't Avram Avinu's choice. God tells Avram, Sarah knows what she's talking about. You have to kick them out. Who sees all of this? Who sees all of this? Yitzchak. Yitzchak saw all of this unfold. Yitzchak saw his half-brother pack up his bags. Yitzchak saw his father's wife being expelled from. What do you think? They just went and said, okay, have a good life. Can you imagine the tears? Can you imagine the pain? Can you imagine the difficulty? You know, Yishmael loved Avram, and Avram loved his son. Can you even imagine what that must have looked like? Can you imagine what that scene must have been? Can you imagine the shrieks? Can you imagine the cries? Can you imagine the pain? Can you imagine the agony? And Yitzchak Avinu, was a little boy at the time, sees all of this. Sees all of this. So where does he set up his residence? He sets up his residence in Be'er Lachayroi. And where does he go to daven? He goes to daven by the bushes of Yishmael. And what does he daven for? He says, Ribono Shel Olam, I'm not going to do this. Don't test me like you tested my father. I can handle all that stuff. That's not my problem. Don't ever make me choose between my children. Don't ever let it be that one is chosen and one is not. Don't let me have a Yitzchak and Yishmael. I don't want that. So Yitzchak Avinu sets up his residence in Be'er Lacharoi, walks around the bushes in which his half-brother was discarded, because he pledges, he promises himself, that I will never have a Yishmael. HaKadosh Baruch Hu should bless me with a family. HaKadosh Baruch Hu should bless me with a mishpacha. I don't care who they are or what they are. I'm not kicking anyone out. I will never do to one of my children what my father was commanded. Remember, Avinu didn't do it on his own volition. He didn't do it from his own choosing. But Yitzchak Avinu says, Yibon Shalom, don't test me. Don't do that to me, because I'm telling you right now that if you tell me to kick out one of my kids, I'm telling you right now, I'm not going to do it. I'm telling you right now, I'm not my father. I saw the pain. I said, can you imagine, you know, we look at these stories sometimes through very simple eyes. Do you think Avraham Avinu ever was able to put his head down on his pillow without wondering where Yishmael is? You know, when our children are out of the house, we're consumed with worry. And meanwhile, again, you know, we could call them, text them, tweet them, whatever, you know, whatever else. Call, you know, WhatsApp their friends. You know, we could always find them. Avraham Avinu goes to sleep every single night, not knowing, where's my Yishmael? Is he alive? Is he dead? What's happening with him? Yitzchak Avinu sees all of this and he says, I will have no part of that. That will not be in my family. Take a look now at number 15. Writes the Medrash Shemen HaTov, Yeshomar Od, Dimashinem Arvayehav Yitzchak Yisesov, Hainu Mishnei Tamim, Tahainu Tam Echa Kitzai Befif, Vatam Sheni, skip to the second part, Vatam Sheni, Kirifko Heves as Yaakov. Says the Shemen HaTov, the Sefer Shemen HaTov, do you want to know what it means that Yitzchak loved Esav? It was a reaction. When Yitzchak saw how much that Rivka loved Yaakov, he saw this whole, he had flashbacks. He began to see his own childhood replaying. He began to see a parent who clearly had an affinity for one child over the other. And he sees this. And how does he react? He look, this is amazing. Ve'im kein yargish Esav es atzmo kimakupach o mibli mishi yizdabek bo. Yitzchak Avinu says, I can't imagine how my Esav feels. Rivka's giving all of this attention to Yaakov. Rivka's giving all this love to Yaakov. She's showering all this praise on Yaakov. I can't imagine how marginalized and unloved my Esav must feel. And Yitzchak Avinu says, I didn't feel it, but I saw what it meant to be an unloved child. I saw what it meant not to be the apple of your father's eye. I saw what it was to be a second-class citizen. So Yitzchak Avinu sees Rivka lavishing all of this love upon Yaakov, and he feels his heart breaks for Esav. How must Esav feel on the inside? V'lachein, mitzad adin, richem Yitzchak al Esav va'av oso. Therefore, what does Yitzchak do? Yitzchak Avinu decides to level the playing field. If you're going to play favorites, I'm going to level the playing field and I'm going to play a favorite also. Not because I want to play favorites, but because I don't want any of our children to feel marginalized. Because I will not have a Yishmael. Because I lived in Be'er Lachairoi. I walked around amongst those bushes every single day. I remember what I saw in my childhood. And I will not let that happen in my home. And therefore Yitzchak goes out of his way to overcompensate for the perception of the lack of love for Esav. Again, it's a perception. Whether it was real or not, we don't know. But his perception that Esav must have felt unloved, Yitzchak overcompensates for that, and therefore again plays favorites with Yitzchak. A dramatic, dramatic understanding of this Torah. But what does it teach us? But what's the lesson? See, but what ends up happening is something very dramatic, which is Yitzchak Avinu, in his effort to fulfill his own prophecy, becomes blind to the not just literally, but figuratively as well, metaphorically, to the shortcomings of his son. You see, Yitzchak Avinu at the end of the day doesn't fully comprehend who Esav is. And that's why, again, remember, leaving aside the whole trickery of Yitzchak was ready to give the firstborn brachos to who? He was ready to give it to Esav. But one thing, Esav didn't deserve those brachos. Esav sold his birthright. Esav has no interest, no desire, and really no ability to perpetuate the Abrahamic legacy. Yet, Yitzchak is willing to go ahead and give him those brachos. So what's the lesson? I think the Torah is teaching us an incredible idea, which is, see, Yitzchak Avinu makes a decision. And what's his decision? His decision is, there will not be another Yishmael. His decision is, I will not let history repeat itself. And therefore again, because he makes that decision, he creates a reality for himself. And that reality that he creates is Esav is good. Because if I entertain the possibility that Esav is not good, then what? Then there's the possibility that I would ultimately again have to go ahead and expel him. So Yitzchak Avinu creates for himself essentially an alternate reality. An alternate reality in which Esav is good, Esav is righteous, Esav is okay, maybe he's not as pious as his brother, but he's okay. And herein lies the great tragedy of the Yitzchak Avinu story. That when you create an alternate reality for yourself, and you create truths as the way you want them to be, and not as the way they actually are, you end up making all kinds of mistakes in life. Yitzchak Avinu decides Esav will never be a Yishmael. And because he creates that alternate reality for himself, he is unable to see things for what they really are. He is unable to see things the way they are. And that's the pshat in the pasuk. If you go back to number one for just a moment, what does the pasuk say? Vayehav Yitzchak es Esav. Yitzchak loved Esav. Why? Kitzayid befiv. So what does Kitzayid befiv mean? Perhaps what it means is Kitzayid befiv, that Yitzchak trapped himself with his own mouth. What does that mean? Yitzchak trapped himself with his own mouth. Yitzchak made a declarative statement. What's the declarative statement? What was the declarative statement? There will not be a Yishmael. There's no tzaddik in Russia. They're both tzaddikim. He made that declaration. But your son's not a tzaddik. But he's not a tzaddik. And in fact, maybe if you are actually willing to look at who he really is, maybe we can help him. But Yitzchak Avinu, you trapped yourself in your own words. Again, from such a beautiful way, such a beautiful perspective, such an incredible desire to not have history repeat itself. Kitzayid befiv, he trapped himself with his own words. He creates his own alternate reality in which Esav has to be a tzaddik. I have to love him. He has to be good because we can't have another Yishmael. And when you go out and you create your own alternate realities, then of course you become out of touch with actual reality. And when you become out of touch with actual reality, that's when a person begins to make all kinds of mistakes. And by the way, now you begin to also understand why Rivka Imenu, you know, Rav Hirsch has this whole idea, like I alluded to before, that Rivka's always trying to talk to Yaakov. She's always trying to tell him like the way that it is. And now we always think to ourselves, okay, you know, if he loves his wife, he trusts his wife, why won't, she's the mother, she's the Akaras of life, she knows the kids better than he does, so why not take her advice? Why? Because to take her advice means to open yourself up to the possibility that one son is righteous and one son is not. And to open myself up to the possibility that one son is righteous and one son is not means that it's possible that the Yitzchak Yishmael dynamic will replay again. And I can't hear that. I can't hear that. I can't listen to that. I can't absorb that. And therefore, I choose to live in my contrived reality. I choose to live in my alternate. I like this world. I like this world. In this world, everyone's a tzaddik. In this world, everyone's righteous. In this world, everyone's good. This is the world I like to live in. This is the world in which I'm going to remain. What's the lesson that we are to learn from this? The lesson is that we unfortunately make the mistake of Yitzchak all of the time. We create alternate realities for ourselves all of the time. It's alternate realities as where we tell ourselves, I can't accomplish something. You know, so again, we hear this every single day. Either we hear it because we're saying it to ourselves, or we hear other, I can't do this. I can't accomplish this. What does that mean when a person says, I can't accomplish something? What that statement means is, I have created for myself a reality in which I cannot accomplish. Why did I create that? Why would anybody ever create a reality for themselves like that? Protection. Because again, if I create a reality in which I can't accomplish, then wonderful. Then that's fantastic. Because then I don't have to try. Because I can't. I can't do it. People say, I can't change. I acknowledge that I have certain things that are wrong with me. Certain things that are flaws within me. I'm, as we said before, I'm not channeling my energies in the right, but I can't change. This is who I am. I hate that statement. Right? This is who I am. See, if you're going to say that, you just have to add on one more phrase. This is who I am because this is who I choose to be. So just acknowledge that this is not who you are because change is beyond your control. This is who you are because this is the you that you choose to perpetuate. This is the reality that you choose to create and that you choose to perpetuate for yourself. And Nebuch, people live their entire lives in these contrived alternate realities. We create them to protect ourselves. We create them in order to lower the bar of expectations. We do it, we create them in order to save ourselves from the pain of failure. But at the end of the day, it always boomerangs back. You know, at the end of the day, how does the story end for Yitzchak Avinu? How does the alternate reality work out? How does it work out? Not very well. He has two sons, right? At the end of the story, Esav is ready to kill. I don't mean that as a metaphor, right? Literally, ready to kill Yaakov. Yaakov Avinu has to run away. Yaakov Avinu has to run away. He has to go live by Lavan. It creates an entire cycle of events. By the way, just you should know, Yaakov Avinu has to run away to the point that when his mother dies, when Rivka dies, Yaakov Avinu is not there. You know, there's a whole discussion amongst the Mefarshim, who buried Rivka? If you notice again, the Torah actually never tells us about the death of Rivka Imenu. How do we know about the death of Rivka Imenu? How do we know about it? I'm testing your Tanakh knowledge now. How do we know about it? Because the Torah says, in Parshas Vayishlach, Vatamas Devorah Menekes Rivka. Devorah, the nurse of Rivka, died. Who cares? What does that have to do with anything? So Chazal say that's an allusion to, we don't even hear about the death of Rivka Imenu. Do you know why the Ramban says? Because she died anonymously. Because Yitzchak couldn't bury her. He was blind. He hired some guys to bury Rivka. Rivka Imenu, the second of the Imos, doesn't have a levaya with throngs of people. Doesn't have her children there. Esav wants nothing to do with her because he feels betrayed. Yaakov is living somewhere far away. This is what happens when you live in alternate realities. True reality, actual reality, always catches up with us. It always boomerangs back. And when it comes back with a bite. And when it comes back with a force. It's sometimes very alluring to create our alternate realities because they're happier, there's less stress, there's less expectations, I don't have to try as hard. But at some point in time, the alternate reality comes crashing down for all of us. Just like the way we started this year. From our parents, sometimes we learn what to do, sometimes we learn what not to do. Yitzchak Avinu has the most beautiful of motivations. I will not have another Yishmael. He creates a reality to support that desire. Unfortunately, it is not a true reality. It's a false reality. And so Yitzchak Avinu ultimately teaches us, make sure the reality we're living in is a true one and not a contrived one. Make sure that we're not establishing or creating our own glass ceilings. Make sure that we're not limiting ourselves and calling our accomplishments unrealistic simply because we're trying to free ourselves from trying a little bit harder. Every once in a while, when I say once in a while, I mean every day, it's important for us to do a self-check and to ask ourselves, are the realities that we're living in the ones that we've created to avoid pushing ourselves, to avoid growth, to avoid change? Or are they the actual realities in which we should exist? Halavai, we should be zocheh mer tashem, that if we're living in contrived or alternate realities, which inevitably we do at some point in time, we should have the koach to break through the glass ceilings. We should have the koach to see ourselves, to see our world, to see our lives for what they are, and in mer tashem from there to go on to accomplish great things. Okay.